Ovo je test razumijevanja odslušanog teksta iz stranog jezika. Svaki snimak slušat ćete dva puta. Imaćete dovoljno vremena da pročitate pitanja prije nego što čujete tekst i da provjerite svoje odgovore. Dok slušate, možete upisivati svoje odgovore u test knjižicu. Poslije slušanja imaćete dva minuta da provjerite svoje odgovore. Prvi zadatak. Imate dva minuta da pročitate pitanja.
Yonah Lehr is the author of Imagine, a new book about the roots of creativity. We met for lunch at the restaurant at Royal Institute of British Architects in London to discuss his book, The Brain and His Lunch. Mr. Lehr, what is it that drew you to write about the brain?
I've always been drawn to the mystery of it. The brain is just 3 pounds of meat and 12 watts of electricity, yet everything we think and feel can be traced back to some quirk of its matter.
Yes, indeed.
It's also a locus for so many topics. If I have an asset, it's that I'm curious, naively curious about everything. Mm-hmm. And I think the brain is very interesting to people who can't figure out what it is that interests them the most. Mm-hmm. If you want to discuss philosophy or God or art, you can talk about it in terms of the brain.
But you don't want to pursue a career as a neuroscientist.
Well, I did for a while. Hmm? I worked in a great neuroscience laboratory at Columbia University. But to be really good at science, you can't just love the ideas. You have to love the act of executing data, of taking these big metaphysical constructs like memory and reducing them to things you can test on a sea slug. After 4 years of poking sea slugs, I realized I was a terrible scientist. I mean,
you did?
I had a blast, but I didn't realize how bad I was at experimental work until the senior researcher took me aside and told me, "You really shouldn't be doing this."
Wow.
So I stumbled around for a while, working out what to specialize in. I studied 20th century literature and theology at Oxford. Mm-hmm. Then I realized I missed science. Mm-hmm. I craved empiricism, facts. I miss the optimism of scientists. Mm-hmm. Even when they're discussing the darkest recesses of human nature, there's a sense that we can fix this because we know more today than we did yesterday.
Yeah.
And tomorrow we'll know even more.
Yes. You've been repeatedly drawn to the intersection of neuroscience and creativity.
True.
Why is that?
Creativity is a defining feature of our species. We live in worlds of our own invention, just look around.
Yeah.
No other species does that.
Really, yes.
That's deeply mysterious to me, and I'm drawn to mystery.
Is neuroscience explaining away the mystery of creativity?
No, right now we're just scraping the surface. Neuroscience is mostly reverse, engineering the habits of artists and innovators.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, we live in a day and age where we assume the way to be productive is to always keep your attention focused.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
Creative people have known for a long time that when you're stuck, it's a good idea to take a break.
Yes.
Archimedes took a bath.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Newton sat under the apple tree.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan went to Woodstock.
Mm-hmm.
Neuroscience can help us understand the mechanics of that wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we often mismanage creativity at work and in our education system?
Yes. We assume the best way to be productive is to always be paying attention. To be due some caffeine, sitting at your desk, looking at your computer screen, or if you're a kid, facing forwards, looking at the blackboard.
Yeah, yeah.
We tell children not to daydream, even though the evidence is that people with a higher propensity to daydream are more creative.
Mm-hmm.
In America, we diagnose 20% of kids with attention deficit disorder.
Mm-hmm.
We say that these kids can't pay attention well enough, so we give them mild amphetamines to make them pay attention better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it works.
Mm-hmm.
They can pay more attention to very tedious lessons. So we assume we've fixed them.
Yeah.
But the
yeah.
best insights often come when you're not paying attention.
When should people who are working on a creative problem stop paying attention to it?
The best way is to ask yourself, do I have the feeling of knowing? The classic example of a feeling of knowing is when a word is on the tip of your tongue.
Yes.
Even though we don't know it, we know that we can know it, and that if we keep on searching for it, we'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
If I gave you a calculus problem, you might look at it and say, I couldn't solve that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I gave you a simple algebra problem, you could quickly say, I can't do that. That's a pretty amazing capacity when you think about it. And it turns out that feelings of knowing are remarkably accurate guides to whether or not we can solve a problem in a given time frame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When it comes to creative problems, mm-hmm. If you've got a feeling of knowing, then you should keep on paying attention. You should drink that triple espresso, you should chain yourself to the desk, but in any creative process, at some point, you hit a wall.
Yeah.
You get stuck.
Yeah, definitely.
At that point, you should go and take a long walk, let yourself daydream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then a fresh insight is more likely to occur to you.
It's a terrible paradox. The more you try to make creativity happen, the less it happens.
Exactly. It's very humbling. It suggests we don't know very much about how to foster the creative process. It also reminds us of the importance of serendipity.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity is not about finding the information you were looking for. It's about encountering the information you never knew you were looking
yeah.
for.
The book makes clear how much a person's creative output depends on what's around them.
Mm-hmm.
Even the greatest of geniuses benefit from being in the right place, the right time.
Yes. Historians have long pondered why you get this really weird flourishing of talent in certain places, in certain eras. Ancient Athens, Renaissance, Florence. Are they just flukes?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but I think T.S. Eliot put his finger on it,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
writing about Elizabethan London.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Eliot said it wasn't that they had more geniuses born during those decades, but that less genius was wasted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are typically educational reforms during these eras. Shakespeare's father was a Glover, for example, who signed his name with a mark.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the time he was 8, Shakespeare was being taught Latin by an Oxford-educated teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Marlowe got a full scholarship to Cambridge.
Yeah.
It was the first generation of playwrights who came from all parts of society and were able to make a name for themselves.
Indeed, yeah, yeah.
In these ages, there are usually new ways of encountering information too. In the 16th century, the publishing industry was being born. Shakespeare was getting access to stories and plays that had been written centuries before his time.
Mm-hmm.
That's where he stole all his plots.
Mm-hmm.
He took a mediocre melodrama and turned it into Hamlet. Mm.
Which writers do you read for pleasure?
I probably read Virginia Woolf more than anyone else.
Yeah.
When I'm hating every word I write, I can pick up to the lighthouse and be enchanted.
Mm-hmm.
Woolf was intensely interested in capturing the mind and the page, but also she's just an extraordinary writer.
Yeah, she is.
You read the most ordinary and banal of her letters, and they just have a song to them.
I see.
In terms of poetry, I'm a huge Auden fan. I love his late poetry the most, when his poems become more personal, more intimate.
Mm-hmm.
In Praise of Limestone is probably my single favorite poem.
Really? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is this old man talking about how the body is like limestone? It seems so solid, yet mere water can wear it away. Mm-hmm. It's closer than his earlier poems. There are lines in there that don't quite fit the scheme.
Mm-hmm.
A little too long. Mm-hmm. The metaphor's a little cluttered, but the poem's messiness is part of its beauty.
Thank you, Mr. Lair.
You're welcome.
Poslušajte ponovo.
Jonna Lair is the author of Imagine, a new book about the roots of creativity. We met for lunch at the restaurant at Royal Institute of British Architects in London to discuss his book, The Brain and Sea Slugs. Mr. Lair, what is it that drew you to write about the brain?
I've always been drawn to the mystery of it. The brain is just 3 pounds of meat and 12 watts of electricity, yet everything we think and feel can be traced back to some quirk of its matter.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm. It's also a locus for so many topics. If I have an asset, is that I'm curious, naively curious about everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the brain is very interesting to people who can't figure out what it is that interests them the most.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to discuss philosophy or God or art, you can talk about it in terms of the brain.
But you don't want to pursue a career as a neuroscientist.
Well, I did for a while. Mm-hmm. I worked in a great neuroscience laboratory at Columbia University. But to be really good at science, you can't just love the ideas. You have to love the act of executing data,
mm-hmm.
Of taking these big metaphysical constructs like memory and reducing them to things you can test on a sea slug.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
After 4 years of poking sea slugs, I realized I was a terrible scientist. I mean,
you did?
I had a blast, but I didn't realize how bad I was at experimental work until the senior researcher took me aside and told me, "You really shouldn't be doing this."
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So I stumbled around for a while, working out what to specialize in. I studied 20th century literature and theology at Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
Then I realized I missed science. I craved empiricism, facts. I miss the optimism of scientists.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they're discussing the darkest recesses of human nature, there's a sense that we can fix this because we know more today than we did yesterday.
Yeah.
And tomorrow we'll know even more.
Yes.
You've been repeatedly drawn to the intersection of neuroscience and creativity.
True.
Why is that?
Creativity is a defining feature of our species. We live in worlds of our own invention, just look around.
Yeah.
No other species does that.
Really, yes.
That's deeply mysterious to me, and I'm drawn to mystery.
Is neuroscience explaining away the mystery of creativity?
No. Right now, we're just scraping the surface. Neuroscience is mostly reverse, engineering the habits of artists and innovators.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, we live in a day and age where we assume the way to be productive is to always keep your attention focused.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
creative people have known for a long time that when you're stuck, it's a good idea to take a break.
Yes.
Archimedes took a bath.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
Newton
mm-hmm.
sat under the apple tree.
Mm-hmm.
Dylan went to Woodstock.
Mm-hmm.
Neuroscience can help us understand the mechanics of that wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that we often mismanage creativity at work and in our education system?
Yes. We assume the best way to be productive is to always be paying attention. To be juiced on caffeine, sitting at your desk, looking at your computer screen, or if you're a kid, facing forwards, looking at the blackboard.
Yeah, yeah.
We tell children not to daydream, even though the evidence is that people with a higher propensity to daydream are more creative.
Mm-hmm.
In America, we diagnose 20% of kids with attention deficit disorder.
Mm-hmm.
We say that these kids can't pay attention well enough, so we give them mild amphetamines to make them pay attention better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it works.
Mm-hmm.
They can pay more attention to very tedious lessons. So we assume we fixed them.
Yeah.
But the
yeah.
best insights often come when you're not paying attention.
When should people who are working on a creative problem stop paying attention to it?
The best way is to ask yourself, do I have a feeling of knowing? The classic example of a feeling of knowing is when a word is on the tip of your tongue.
Yes.
Even though we don't know it, we know that we can know it, and that if we keep on searching for it, we'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
If I gave you a calculus problem, you might look at it and say, I couldn't solve that.
Mm-hmm.
But if I gave you a simple algebra problem, you could quickly say, I can't do that. That's a pretty amazing capacity when you think about it. And it turns out that feelings of knowing are remarkably accurate guides to whether or not we can solve a problem in a given time frame.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When it comes to creative problems, mm-hmm. If you've got a feeling of knowing, then you should keep on paying attention. You should drink that triple espresso, you should chain yourself to the desk, but in any creative process, at some point, you hit a wall.
Yeah.
You get stuck.
Yeah, definitely.
At that point, you should go and take a long walk. Let yourself daydream.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then a fresh insight is more likely to occur to you.
It's a terrible paradox. The more you try to make creativity happen, the less it happens.
Exactly. It's very humbling. It suggests we don't know very much about how to foster the creative process. It also reminds us of the importance of serendipity.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity is not about finding the information you were looking for. It's about encountering the information you never knew you were looking
yeah.
for.
The book makes clear how much a person's creative output depends on what's around them.
Mm-hmm.
Even the greatest of geniuses benefit from being in the right place, the right time.
Yes. Historians have long pondered why you get this really weird flourishing of talent in certain places, in certain eras. Ancient Athens, Renaissance, Florence. Are they just flukes?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but I think T.S. Eliot put his finger on it,
mm-hmm.
Writing about Elizabethan London.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Eliot said it wasn't that they had more geniuses born during those decades, but that less genius was wasted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are typically educational reforms during these eras. Shakespeare's father was a glover, for example, who signed his name with a mark.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Mm-hmm. By the time he was 8, Shakespeare was being taught Latin by an Oxford-educated teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher Marlowe got a full scholarship to Cambridge.
Yeah.
It was the first generation of playwrights who came from all parts of society and were able to make a name for themselves.
Indeed, yeah.
In these ages, there are usually new ways of encountering information too. In the 16th century, the publishing industry was being born. Shakespeare was getting access to stories and plays that had been written centuries before his time. That's where he stole all his plots. He took a mediocre melodrama and turned it into Hamlet.
Which writers do you read for pleasure?
I probably read Virginia Woolf more than anyone else. When I'm hating every word I write, I can pick up to the lighthouse and be enchanted. Woolf was intensely interested in capturing the mind and the page, but also she's just an extraordinary writer. You read the most ordinary and banal of her letters, and they just have a song to them.
I see.
In terms of poetry, I'm a huge Auden fan. I love his late poetry the most, when his poems become more personal, more intimate. In Praise of Limestone is probably my single favorite poem. Is this old man talking about how the body is like limestone? It seems so solid, yet mere water can wear it away. It's closer than his earlier poems. There are lines in there that don't quite fit the scheme. A little too long. The metaphor's a little cluttered, but the poem's messiness is part of its beauty.
Thank you, Mr. Lair.
You're welcome.
Sada imate 2 minuta da pregledate svoje odgovore. Ovo je kraj testa razumijevanja odslušanog teksta.